This is WHFR Dearborn from Henry Ford Community College, which is closed today due to the snowfall. So don't call and say what's going on there at the college, as someone just did. Nothing is going on here at the college. Over 600 schools are closed, including Wayne State University. I assume University of Michigan Dearborn, haven't heard specifically on that. But pretty much every school is closed today. If you don't need to go out, as they're saying, don't go out unless you have four-wheel drive. It is still snowing, at least here at the college. Just 2 minutes ago when I looked out the window, things could be better later. If you have to go out, maybe you just want to wait a while until the roads get a chance to be cleared for the second or third time today. A big snowfall, big news, but more news and alternative views coming up for the local area on the new WHFR Journal. Coming up now for the next hour live from Henry Ford Community College. Welcome to another episode of Local News and Views, Dearborn area, and things nearby. My name is Jay Koronick, and you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. Today we were making Angels in the Snow and trying to get in through the unshoveled parking lot here at Henry Ford Community College. Bill Wright had an American-made SUV, and he made it in this morning. We're leaving that to the option of our unpaid volunteers. We don't think that they should risk their lives coming in, even though you know you need the kind of alternative entertainment and news that we provide here. And yours truly had a four-wheel drive sedan, which doesn't have much ground clearance, but I had no trouble getting in after I was buffeted around three or four different directions on the roads around Fairlane Town Center and the college. So I do not recommend that you try the roads today if you do not have to. That's the news. Usually the gloom and doom or terrible severe storm weather forecast are exaggerated. Not today. Okay, so be careful. If you have to go out there, if you don't have to, stay home. Yeah, this is called the new WHFR Journal, and today is December the 19th. And if you've been home and nothing else to do but watch TV news or listen to other radio stations like WDET, and where they had President Bush's broadcast this morning live at 9 a.m., you know this story anyway, but we've been covering this. It is a local story. It is a state story. It is a national, even an international story of import. The President of the United States, President Bush, still for another 30 days, has announced today $13.4 billion in emergency loans to prevent the collapse of General Motors and Chrysler, and another $4 billion available for the hobbled automakers. I'm reading this story directly from the New York Times. That was put on their website at 10:01 this morning. In February. Okay, available for the other automakers in February, with the entire bailout conditioned on the companies undertaking sweeping reorganizations to show that they can return to profitability. The loans, as GM and Chrysler teeter on the brink of insolvency, essentially throws the companies a lifeline from the taxpayers that will keep them afloat until March 31st. At that point, what do you think, they're making boats here? They love those metaphors when it comes to the financial institutions. Yeah, keeping your bank or keeping your car company afloat. Mixed metaphor, I think, but oh well, old-fashioned English teacher. Let's go on with the story if you haven't heard it. At that point, the new Obama administration, that is from January 20th on, will determine if the automakers are meeting the conditions of the loans and will continue to receive government aid or must repay the loans and face bankruptcy proceedings. Mr. Bush made his announcement a week after Senate Republicans blocked legislation to aid the automakers that had been negotiated by the White House and congressional Democrats. And the loan package announced by the president includes roughly the identical requirements in that bill, which had been approved by the House. Mr. Bush, in a televised speech this morning before the opening of the market, said that under other circumstances, he would have let the companies fail as punishment for bad business decisions. And a lot of people are saying, well, didn't do that with all the big investment bankers, did ya? Did ya? To use Sarah Palin kind of language, did ya? Okay, nope. And no strings attached to them. These are loans, folks. A lot of strings going to be attached. Pretty much the same as what was negotiated in the Senate bill. We understand, but we don't know the details for that. And in fact, I heard a follow-up on other radio station news this morning is that George Bush wants to take this loan money out of the last $350 billion of the $700 billion rescue package, supposedly just for banks, called TARP, Temporary Authorization to Do Something, anyway, whatever TARP stands for. But the $700 billion idea and concept, they want to take this little loan, and it really is, you know, out of $350 billion left that hasn't already been spent on the financial institutions with no strings attached and no noticeable results and no improvement in the credit markets. But, okay, these are my opinions. This is not the New York Times now. But we all know what the criticisms are, and we need to share these opinions as rationally as possible and try to sort out what the best course forward is. We don't just want to keep throwing stones at everybody. That's not productive, of course. Nonetheless, those people that have done bad things need to continue to not get a piece of the action. And maybe they needed to go broke. A few of those big financial institutions, maybe they needed to go broke. Maybe we need to do things a little differently. I understand Goldman Sachs is having quite a profitable year now, thank you, after the 150, 250, whatever, a billion they got, no strings attached. They're doing fine. They're paying salaries out. They're paying bonuses, not as much. All their stocks are going up because they got a ton of money. They don't have to pay it back. And, hey, business as usual. They're not giving it to anybody else. They're not making the economy any better. But they're fine. Thank you. Thanks a lot. Oh, why not let them go bankrupt there? Those mortgages could have been picked up by somebody else, I think. Some other bank that was better run wanted to buy up the risky loans or the foreclosures because they'll get money out of it eventually, you know, when markets go up. Jim Cramer, the mad money guy on one of the cable television channels, CNBC, MSNBC, whatever he's on, he thinks June 30th, housing market's going to go back up. Prices will go back up. Sales will go back up. Just far enough away that he can't be criticized now for being an idiot. But next June, we'll see whether or not he's truly an idiot. And he's apologized for being an idiot many times before, especially in not seeing this disaster coming. And a lot of people didn't see it, did they? Including our Secretary of the Treasury, okay, who's Mr. Money Czar, in fact, at this point, isn't he? He can just dole out money right and left. But this money to the automakers, let me get back to the point, they still need permission from Congress to touch and to give this little dinky loan out of the second $350 billion. In other words, they only got permission from Congress. Yeah, you got $700 billion, but you're going to get it $350 billion at a time. And before you need the second $350 billion, you got to ask for it. Oh my gosh. You don't have the votes in the Senate. Will the Republicans just sort of waffle on this? You know, the president says the money's going to come there, but somebody said today that they still have to get the Congress to vote to open up the second $350 billion. to give the automakers this little dinky loan, which probably won't be enough. And Ford, you Dearborn people, you, us, they don't need it at this point. And so they're not going to get any money at this point because they think they can hold out. But the money is needed, as we've said many times before, because the suppliers that supply GM and or Chrysler also supply, to a certain extent, one or two or five or 10 million of them, also Ford Motor Company. And so, you know, the switches, the knobs, the upholstery, whatever little bits and pieces, steering wheels that aren't directly made by these companies come from other suppliers who actually make maybe not the same thing. I said, well, is it all the same car then from all these different? No. They make different qualities and different sizes and shapes for different people. But if they go out of business because they lose GM's business, then they're not there to make Ford steering wheels or switches. You see, they're just not there because they're out of business because they lost a third or half of their business. GM and for Chrysler and GM both. If they both go under, then Ford's not left with too many suppliers still in business to provide them with what they need. So the loan's pretty essential. Someone I was talking to earlier saw our governor, Jennifer Granholm, on Meet the Press, I believe it was, last Sunday, and that she, in the course of the interview, was in tears about her treatment and the treatment of the state of Michigan and the treatment of the auto industry by Congress. And I want to read for you because I think it's a first. Comments from Mayor O'Reilly after he got back from Washington, D.C. He had an interview with the Times-Herald newspapers, and this story was written by J. Patrick Pepper at the Times-Herald. It was in this Wednesday's edition, December 17th. Just listen to what our mayor said about our congressman. And I'm sure it was especially some of those Republican congressmen from southern states who treated them the worst. These are states that have big auto plants in them, foreign auto plants. But here's the story. Okay, just listen to this. And this has got to be one of the most unusual and most angry stories featuring a Dearborn mayor who is, they're the angry one here, that I've ever read. Now, Mayor O'Reilly is civilized and he's a good person, but this is strong language. Now, you don't have to cover your kids' ears here, but New WHOR Journal, we don't go that into that, you know. We may be making waves, but we don't go into that bad language stuff. But one of the strongest worded, most upset statements from a mayor of Dearborn in my recorded, in my memory, okay, recorded history, no, just in my own memory, which is failing all the time. But nonetheless, here it is. This is from, again, last Wednesday's Dearborn Times-Herald. Mayor John O'Reilly Jr. didn't mince words when it came to his assessment of congressional leaders after his Washington, D.C. visit last week. Mince. Oh, a word, a metaphor from the holidays. Mince meat pie? Yeah, well, anyway. O'Reilly went as part of the mayor's automotive coalition, we talked about this last week, to lobby undecided congressional leaders in favor of auto industry bridge loans. The coalition, comprising about 20 mayors and township supervisors from around the country, took turns meeting with representatives and congressmen and women from different states, hoping to sway their vote. But with the loan package failing to get enough votes for passage last Thursday, week ago Thursday, week ago yesterday, hopes that action will be taken soon enough were dealt a serious blow. In an interview with the Times-Herald, O'Reilly shared his thoughts on many of the issues currently surrounding the domestic auto industry struggle to survive. Here are some excerpts. So these are direct quotes, folks. John B. O'Reilly Jr., mayor of Dearborn, on Congress. Quote, these people are supposed to be leaders, but they're not leaders at all. They're parochial, myopic people who have no vision for the future of this country. Unquote. On the stringent financial terms being demanded as part of the loan package. Quote from Mayor O'Reilly, Congress is the only institution I know of that spends 30 to 40% more than it takes in year after year. and they're criticizing how the auto manufacturers run their business? Look at them. They're the greatest example of self-serving hypocrisy I've ever seen. Unquote. On the topic, and I believe the topic is on the loss of manufacturing overseas. This is what Mayor O'Reilly had to say. Quote, "The auto industry is the last great manufacturing industry we have. This country has just piece by piece given up its manufacturing base, and we're becoming a second-class nation. Other nations are selling us the stuff we used to make, and now we're being pushed to a second-class consumer status because of it." Unquote. On what a big three collapse would mean for the country. Again, Dearborn Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr., he said, quote, "We have no idea. It would be devastating to this region, which already has been devastated. There's no question. This loan has to get done, or I think history will look back on this as the tipping point that makes us a second-class nation." Unquote. Okay, his comment on the $700 billion Wall Street bailout. John B. O'Reilly Jr., quote, "Ironically, we reward people," he said, "ironically, we reward people with no strings attached who behave badly. These lending institutions out of greed made a deliberate decision to put a lot of people at risk. They knew damn well," and I'm going to use that term, and it's meant in an angry way, but it was spoken by our mayor, and I think for good reason. And it is not against FCC rules directly, okay? But he said this, and this is news. I'm going to use the Canadian broadcasting criteria and say it, because this is what he said. These bankers, these investment institutions, lending institutions, he said they knew damn well what they were doing, and we still gave them the money. Yet we still have millions of people losing their homes. This is just a tragedy, a real example of government run amok. And, of course, the opinions expressed on the new WHFR Journal are not necessarily those of anyone here at Henry Ford Community College, other than myself, and, in this case, Mayor John B. O'Reilly Jr. So keep that in mind, and don't start calling the president of the college about what the mayor said. I know probably this interview was done at the end of a bad day in Washington, D.C., or just arriving home from Washington, D.C., and I think the mayor was as politic as he could be about the terrible situation that was last week after Thursday's defeat of the bill that had been worked out by the president, no less, a Republican, sort of. Not necessarily competent Republican, but that's my opinion anyway. But a Republican with the auto industry, and had a lot of guidelines and strident rules and so on, and the Senate Republicans still wouldn't go along with it. They just all feel so guilty, I guess, on what they did for the lending institutions and how they're going to have to suffer, or maybe not if they're lame duck Republicans and been already voted out. They won't be there in January to take the consequences. They've already been voted out. So they can vote their conscience or their vote their incompetence. And that's how I feel about it, and you can quote me if you have to. At least last night, President Bush, and this morning in his press release today, but an article that I have from last night, somewhere here. From the New York Times at the end of the evening, indicated... Of course, they think bankruptcy won't be so bad. This is going to be a sort of managed bankruptcy, sort of, an orderly bankruptcy. Of course, I can't find the quote right now, but that's okay, because I read it. You trust my word here. President Bush actually, he didn't phrase it quite this way, but he said, and I'm paraphrasing in the nicest way, and remember, I'm being nice to a president that I feel is... been almost 90% incompetent as a president of the United States, which there's tough standards for competency, and very few presidents have been very high up in competency, I think. And you say, well, it's not all their fault. They don't control the world. You know, some presidents try to control the world and gets them in a lot of trouble when they try to do that, and especially when they don't know what they're doing very well and have advisors who are also obsessed and obsessive and not looking at the bigger pictures hanging on the wall in front of them. Nonetheless, President Bush said in a few words that it's not fair to the incoming president to have a major industry go belly up. Let it happen after January 20th. You know, just, in other words, he liked the bridge concept, that it as a courtesy to the next president. I mean, if Bush was coming in and then this happened, of course, he'd be probably clueless as to what to do. Or would he let them just go bankrupt, as he said, that's what they should do if they were, you know, a bad company. But nonetheless, he knows Obama probably would help them. But whatever, the president going out shouldn't set up a bad situation for the president coming in. Shouldn't destroy a situation before the next president in 30 days can take charge and maybe make some other kind of decision. And that's just courtesy from one president outgoing to the next coming in. It has nothing to do with personal or political philosophy. It's a professional attitude, I think. Now, of course, Bush has already gone against that attitude in another way, but this is a moment when we in the Michigan, Detroit area can't rejoice about what President Bush did this morning, because there's still some that permission to open up the funds for this little dinky loan from Congress that apparently has to be still voted on somehow. And all the strings attached to the loan and so on, which has to be, you know, some sort of plan for repaying the loan. They had to come up with that by March 31st. Well, of course, Obama will put things in place a different way, gives them time enough to get some alternative or replacement legislation going for the auto industry. You know, they could change that loan to a bailout if they felt things were on track. They could do that just by passing laws, you know, and we'll have Democratic majority, House and Senate, and Democratic president. So whatever he wants, as long as it seems like a reasoned plan, should be possible, even before March 31st. But just so things don't go belly up before then with GM and Chrysler, and therefore be a disastrous impact on Ford, this is the right thing to do, Mr. President. What he did isn't the right thing to do, that I think I've already mentioned, is probably more paroling of guilty political appointees of his than even Clinton did. Of course, that, you know, time is not up yet. Usually a flurry of pardons, not paroles, pardons. Let them out scot-free from their punishment, their justly decided punishment, before Bush leaves office. And that'll probably happen the week before. But he's already put in place a whole bunch of anti-environmental rules and principles. I understand he's doing 10 or 15 a day. Now, Obama can reverse them. But these are executive fiats that he can just do, and he's been meaning to do it all along anyway. Now he gets a chance to do it. Ha, ha, ha. How mean-spirited, really, and how vicious is he? And he said, well, he's just being philosophically correct. He's doing what he's able to do in the last month in office, and a president should do what they need to do, what they believe is right. Well, this is the biggest disaster to environmental regulations that we've ever seen or heard of. Not only, I mean, the first 7.5 years of Bush's two terms here haven't been hunky-dory for the environment either, but to get rid of all the other regulations, all the other requirements, he's just going nuts with this, as I see it, and I think Dave Letterman said the word nuts, so I guess I can quote that other great political intelligent pundit, Dave Letterman, CBS comedian. It boggles the mind, everything that's happened here. And I think we all have the kind of anger or, you know, of Mayor O'Reilly or the tears of Governor Granholm. And I'm glad I didn't see that Meet the Press, because I would tear up too. So that's the situation on that topic. This is WHFR.FM, the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views. My name is Jay Koronik, station advisor here at WHFR-FM. You know, if you have any comments or questions, the best thing to do, since we're not always around every moment, is to send an email to whfr@hfcc.edu. That's the best thing to do, and that usually gets forwarded within a day to the appropriate person involved, such as yours truly, and I'll be glad to respond. Any sort of corrections or updates, always happy to receive that and to get us back on track. Of course, it's a week between shows, so it takes a while to do a retraction or a correction or whatever, but always happy to know what you're thinking out there. And I just want to stimulate. I don't want you necessarily to believe what I believe. I'm not one of those pundits on cable TV. I'm not Rush Limbaugh or others like him that try to tell you what to believe. I want to stimulate you and encourage you to read everything in the two local papers. Study. And say, well, what about the Times? What about the Detroit News and Free Press? So those are the two local papers? No. And I have to talk about that next. I mean, the two very local papers we still have in Dearborn, the Dearborn Times Herald and the Dearborn Press and Guide. You need to get both of those papers every week, and you need to read them through every week, because you just read one, you're not getting the whole story, and you're not getting the same, you know, points of view on the stories. You say, well, they both have the same things in them, just a little different. Ah, the devil is in the details. Or, depending on how you want to see that metaphor, that truism, maybe God is in the details. The real truth is there if you look close. And that's what you should do. And then think about it, and then talk about it, and try to keep your calm, if at all possible, and you're talking to others. And try to talk to intelligent others. I mean, what point does it make to talk to somebody that hasn't done any reading, hasn't done any studying, and is not connected already with the political or social process? They got opinions, but it's just based on their emotions. They don't know anything, really. So I have to say, I talk to my friends a lot. Well, what have they studied? What have they read? Well, nothing. Okay, they don't know anything. Who does? Well, they watch television. Watching TV is not enough. Okay, we know that in college. That's why we use things called books in college. Okay, they may become e-books someday. I know a lot of textbooks are being sold to students now, and they're giving access, instead of buying the book made out of paper, they have to use their computer and read the textbook online. For a small fee. And that's happening, but it's still a book. It's print, okay, folks. It's one word after the other, written down. They can go backwards, forwards, go back through different pages. With ebooks, they can underline, e-text, whatever you want to call them. So that will happen in the future, because we got to save trees. We can't be cutting down and wasting paper. But nonetheless, for the time being, talk about things in an intelligent way after you've done the reading and studying yourself with other people that have done some reading and studying. And if you can't find them locally, I guess you'll have to go on the internet. And there's a lot of words on the internet, a lot of different opinions. A lot of them are crazy, even though they look good, bright flashing colors, you know, but it doesn't mean that they know anything about anything. Okay, we're going to look through the Dearborn papers and come up with more stories here in the new WHFR Journal. Let's play a couple of more announcements. These are always non-commercial. We don't do commercials here. We are a non-commercial licensee of the federal government and for the good of people in Dearborn and the surrounding areas. And so take a listen to some things coming up here, at especially at Henry Ford Community College.
Oops. Hey, loyal listeners. We know you tune into WHFR to hear the best in new music that you won't hear on other stations. But the last week of 2008 will be even better. From Friday, December 26th, to Thursday, January 1st, our DJs will be playing their personal favorites. The best tracks from the best albums released over the past year. be sure to tune in and ring in 2009 by hearing the best of 2008, right here on the only station making waves, WHFR.FM.
Leader in education in your community, Henry Ford Community College has provided excellence and innovation in education since 1938. We're proud to have launched the careers of thousands of students both in Michigan and around the world. Celebrate the 70th anniversary of Henry Ford Community College by becoming a student today. Achieve your dreams, and it starts with a visit to hfcc.edu or by calling 1-800-585-HFCC. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice, guaranteed.
If you're thinking about going back to school or continuing your education, you should thank Henry Ford Community College. Since 1938, HFCC has provided excellence and innovation in education and services to their students and their community. Over the decades, thousands of students have gone on to become leaders in their fields, and now it's your turn. The winter semester begins Monday, January 12th, and registration is already taking place. Remember, Henry Ford Community College offers a job skills guarantee, a credit transfer guarantee, and a tuition freeze guarantee that guarantees that your tuition rates will be frozen if you graduate from HFCC within 4 years. Classes are filling up fast, so call 1-800-585-HFCC today or visit us online at www.hfcc.edu for more information. Henry Ford Community College, your best choice, guaranteed.
And speaking so much about Henry Ford Community College, it is closed today. If you didn't know that, if you had normally have a Friday evening class, well, classes are over, first of all, although maybe in some of the tech areas there might be special workshops or something on Friday night. Well, that's all closed. Everybody knows that all the schools are closed today, so there, but I thought I'd say that. The college here is still during the day, still open next Monday and Tuesday, and then closed for the holidays all the way through January 4th, opening again on January 5th. So if you want to register for the winter semester starting in January, on January 12th, you can do that still next Monday or Tuesday. And I don't know until what hours. Usually for registration, they're open a little bit later than 4:30, like 6 o'clock or so. And so it's something to think about. And go to the HFCC website, of course, for details on that. I'm sure it's there somewhere, hfcc.edu. So it's still going to be open, we expect, on Monday and Tuesday, unless, of course, another storm hits. My name is Jay Kornick. This is the new WHFR Journal for Friday, December the 19th, 2008. And here's my comment on the Detroit News, Detroit Free Press situation. Daily Detroit News, Daily Detroit Free Press. Free Press typically a morning paper and News typically the evening paper. They've been operated together, even though they're owned by two separate companies, through what's called a joint operating agreement. So they share like sales staff and some other functions in order to reduce cost. That was the only way the two papers decided they could survive, something like 15 years ago. And, readership has been going down, revenues have been going down, and a decision would have had to be made. The one expected was that one paper or the other would cease to exist. But because they're owned, even in this joint operating agreement, by two different companies, they both wanted to try to survive, and they got some consultant out of California that didn't necessarily know what he was talking about, but they suggested, and I don't know anywhere else in the country that's happened this way, that the paper stop home circulation, home delivery, still publish every day, but many, many fewer copies, and it only be available at bookstores and newsstands, except for Friday, Saturday, Sunday. So you can still subscribe for Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or maybe just Sunday alone. I don't know how they're going to work that out, if you want to. But Monday through Thursday, you have to go out and pick up a paper somewhere, unless, and this was suggested by Craig Folley on WDET, Detroit Today Show, some enterprising company, some entrepreneur that thinks he can figure out a way to do this, they go to whatever newsstands. And by the way, where are the newsstands? Where are the bookstores today? Where can you buy a paper anymore each day? Almost nowhere. Okay. I mean, maybe some, you know, certain drugstores, I'm sure. Walgreens, CVS, 7-Eleven, maybe. I mean, hit and miss, pretty spotty. But then some entrepreneurial person can set up a delivery. He goes to these stores, he buys them all out, and he continues the subscription, but it's just Mondays or Thursdays subscriptions. I don't know if that's even economically feasible. It isn't for the papers, so if it's not feasible for the papers, of course, what does that do? That means anybody wants to stop by the 7-Eleven or the Walgreens to pick up their Monday morning paper, they won't be there because this third-party company has bought them all to try to continue the subscriptions for people at home. Oh, my gosh, what a mess. So they're going to see if they're going to survive and of course, continue to improve their website, their two websites. What's the Detroit News? Debt.com, D-E-T. That's really inappropriate acronym for current news. You want to be in, want to read about your debts or the country's debts, you know, go to their website. Just like Channel 4's website is clickondetroit.com. Click on Detroit? Who the heck came up with that one? Click on Detroit, because they make it like they're not just a radio or TV station. Like everything happening in Detroit happens on the WDIV website. And maybe that'll work. But, of course, there's news operations at radio and TV stations. They have bigger and better websites, or they will shortly. And can the news and the free press really provide something special? I stopped subscribing when they threw out union workers, closed them out about 15 years ago, and that wasn't resolved well, and they replaced them with, call them what you will, scabs, inexperienced writers who might have had enthusiasm, but basically are not good writers and not very knowledgeable. Now, the Detroit paper, especially Detroit News, Freedom of Information, investigative journalism, they did break the story on Mayor Kwame Kilpatrick and his text messages that got him in trouble, that showed that he lied and sent him to jail ultimately. So this kind of muckraking, which is a good thing, you know, investigative journalism, a good thing, only well-funded, rich, okay, newspapers can afford to do this. You say, well, TV stations should be able to. No, but they don't. No, they have smaller operations. They look good on camera. It doesn't mean that they have much time or money to put into investigative journalism. The staffs at most newspapers are much larger and usually a lot more experienced than any radio or TV news staff. In fact, radio news is almost doesn't exist locally. If you get news on other stations, it's because they're reading the wire releases, the press releases. Or in my case, I'm reading the newspapers. I'm getting my stories from the Times Herald and the Press and Guide. I mean, if this is a trend, we're going to lose printed newspapers. And you know, the Times Herald, I don't think they have a website. Thought they did for a while, but they don't now. And the Press and Guide does. It can gravitate towards that more, of course, and then maybe access to the stories has to be by a subscription or something, but I'm willing to do that so I can keep reading something on this show. What am I supposed to do? Go to the council meetings myself? Because no one else will. If we don't have any papers, don't have any reporters, we have papers that don't let reporters do extensive investigations of stories, because the story might be just a little short story once every 6 months rather than a story a week that fills up the paper. So investigative journalism costs a lot. We need the papers. They are the fourth estate. They are, as Thomas Jefferson saw it, one of our founding fathers of this country. We need people investigating in a professional, objective way what our elected officials are doing and what's going on in society, so we can correct the problems that democracy and capitalism are bound to foster. Keep us on track. The watchdog. That's what newspapers are, big, important news organizations. The internet is so scattered with so many opinions, and most of them not grounded in reality, that it's great if you love opinions, but don't you want to know something that used to be called facts? As objective as we can get? Many points of view equally presented? There is a magazine that I read by subscription only because I can't find a newsstand to buy one from regularly, and I want to read it every week anyway. It's called The Week. The Week. And it is a news magazine that they summarize stories from other printed periodicals, and they put together a story that has the many points of view. Oh, that is so good for an intelligent person to see something that pulls together these conflicting and contradicting points of view. And they print out, you know, they point out where some stories obviously are full of lies. You know, whether it's from the president of something, of one company or the other, anyone. And so they compare, they check facts, and they present multiple points of view as fairly as they can. I highly recommend it as an additional subscription to the Times Herald and the Press and Guide for the new year. If you don't know what's going on, you're going to be a victim of the aftermath of everything rather than being able to plan ahead. You need to be able to plan ahead. And if you don't have the information about what's going on right now, in depth, the trends, the styles, what people are thinking about, then you won't know what's going to happen tomorrow. And you're just going to be a victim. You want to avoid being a victim? Read, study, learn from the best, most objective sources you can find. And one source is not enough. Okay. Let's take another look here. Okay. This is an oppressing guide to cash shortfall delays ward project seventh time. Also from J. Patrick Pepper at the Times Herald from this last Wednesday. Quickly working its way into the civically minded residents' lexicon is this phraseology. Wow, is that a lot of big words? See why you read the paper? Paper can put those big words in there. On TV, they don't dare. Most of the news announcers couldn't even pronounce him. I had trouble. Montgomery Ward project delayed again. That's what we're always hearing. For the seventh time since selecting Southfield-based Redico, R-E-D-I-C-O, to redevelop the former department store site, city officials have okayed a request to push back the project. Instead of the December 18th groundbreaking date set forth by the most recent terms of the deal, construction now is slated to begin in May 2009. Being blamed for the latest setback is a cash shortfall at Oakwood Healthcare System. What? People aren't getting sick as much? People have lost their health insurance to pay their bills? That's more likely. Oakwood Healthcare System, who along with Dr. Mark Saffer's Midwest Health is to be the primary tenant of the 155,000 square foot medical office building that would replace the Montgomery Ward department store, now vacant. Oakwood officials said that with an unexpected lack of cash reserves and the fiscal year ending December 31st, starting the project now could deplete their cash levels enough to downgrade their bond ratings. Bond ratings, much like consumer credit ratings, determine the credit worthiness of a corporation and the interest they pay on loans. Moody's rating service currently has Oakwood's long-term bond rating at A2, or the lower end of the upper medium grade class. A downgrade to lower medium grade could mean as much as a 3% hike in Oakwood's interest rates. Quote, with all the financial issues out there, they wanted to make sure they had their house in order coming up to the end of the year. That was from a quote from Economic and Community Development Director Barry Murray. Also changed as part of the new agreement is the payment schedule. Instead of receiving the entire $3.35 million at closing on Friday, the city received a $1 million payment entering into a land contract with Redico and Oakwood. The remaining balance will be paid in 4 installments, $250,000 in February, March, and April, and the final sum in May. If for some reason the terms of the agreement aren't met by May, the city gets to keep any payments and assumes ownership of the parcel. The latest setback marks the second time in 6 months that a bookkeeping issue has held up progress at the corner of Michigan Avenue and Schaefer. So in other words, if I read this right, we already got $1 million. We might get a second million, but that means only $2 million would be paid out by these people, and that they could just bail out in May and still owe the city $1.35 million. In other words, not buy it, but we will have gotten $2 million, but nothing will have happened there. And so this has gone on the seventh time. So how mad are we, and are we going to not take it anymore? Here's the story from Wednesday, December 17th, Dearborn Press and Guide. Council President Tefelsky, quote, administration should look at litigation against Burton Katzman. Now this is, okay, this is not Redico, but Burton Katzman is West Dearborn developer. He says the Burton Katzman has failed to live up to its end of a development agreement. The group has recently had some of its properties, 12 homes in the Abbey Homes West Village Square Complex, come under foreclosure. These are townhouse homes. Call them condos, whatever. 12 of them. I mean, how many were there in the first place? 20? 30? 12 of them are in foreclosure. Did they get cheap money? Did people overbuy? Did they become house poor? Did they get thrown out of work at Ford Motor Company? They lost their jobs. That's a good reason to not pay on your mortgage. Well, we don't know, but 12 of those are under foreclosure. And, of course, then not generating any money, of course. Also, Burton Katzman, though, has failed to capitalize on erecting a hotel mixed-use facility between the two West Dearborn parking decks located on West Village Drive behind the West Village Commons. The businesses in that area, he said, quote, are struggling because they thought they'd have a wider clientele with a hotel in the area. He says, I think we need to pursue litigation. I know another developer. Hakeem Fakuri, he's referring to, is in a similar situation, but Burton Katzman has already entered into a preferred developer agreement with the city, and Fakuri hasn't. So that's the difference. There's a special commitment between Burton Katzman and the city, and they're not living up to it. An issue Tefelsky has with Burton Katzman is the land between the two parking decks. None of the plans Burton Katzman has proposed for the site have materialized. Tefelsky proposed that the city buy the land back and look at other options, but he said Burton Katzman would want to sell the land for more than it's worth. And Tefelsky went on to say it's been too long a wait for Burton Katzman to do something. Okay, to do something with the land. He went on to say that Tefelsky said they have the land valued at more than it's worth. We sold it to them at a price that would aid them in getting their finances straight, unquote. But when the city entered into an agreement with Burton Katzman, the city's obligation of the project was to build the two West Dearborn parking decks, while Burton Katzman was slated to build a 6 to 7 story hotel building and a mixed-use facility. Tefelsky said the possible excuse of the current economic conditions doesn't qualify, as the city entered into its agreement with Burton Katzman, and I'll use this phrase, way back in 2001. Tefelsky said, you look at the timeline, the project should be up and nearly complete. They haven't done their due diligence as it relates to making an investment in the area when you look at the scope of the project. We have to be cognizant of the fact that one developer's time has run out while another's has just started. Anyway, earlier this month, Dearborn Mayor Jack O'Reilly said Burton Katzman is in no danger of losing any of its property despite having some of the properties listed in the foreclosure list. He said they have time to catch up. City officials have had talks about this issue. We're willing to work with them. What they're lacking right now is liquidity. The current economic conditions are a part of what's going on. And so it's a difficult time for them. And I think O'Reilly says, I'm one of those people who believe the market will improve. If that happens, then these companies will have to pay what they owe in order to attract lenders. What about Fakuri? Okay, the story also, another story on the front page of the Wednesday, December 17th Press and Guide. And again, if you don't have this whole paper here, you can't read all the facts because I can't say all the facts in the time I have in this hour. But you could read them real fast. If you were reading it yourself, you could go through both of these papers in an hour. But I know you love to hear my spin on these things and so on. Well, okay. City tables action on Lot A lease extension. Unpaid taxes, the uncertain economy has slowed one more project in town as the city council tabled action in an extension for one of developer Hakeem Fakhouri's projects. Monday night's Dearborn City Council meeting featured proposed action by the seven-member council on an extension of the Dearborn Village Partners, that's DVP, Fakhouri's company, Dearborn Village Square developer agreement, and the lease with an option to purchase City Parking Lot A, located on Garrison north of Michigan Avenue between Military and Howard through December 31, 2009. Subject to certain stipulations. The measure needed action because Fakhouri's agreement expires at the end of this year, but the vote never materialized due to a misunderstanding of some contract language on Fakhouri's part, which caused the council to table its vote. However, a special meeting may be called as a vote has to take place before the end of this year. I guess they weren't going to meet before the end of this year after this Monday's meeting, but I guess they have to now. The city put out requests for proposals for the lot in 2006, and DVP, that is Fakhouri's company, won the bidding battle and has been set to erect amenities such as a movie theater and or other mixed-use facilities, according to the council president. At issue on the city's site, which is why the vote had to be taken, is that Fakhouri has become in default on a number of properties, according to a published report by the Wayne County Treasurer's Office last month. The city charter says the city shall not enter into any agreements with any individual or company if they have become in default on any property. And Mayor Jack O'Reilly said, "I don't know what we'd do if Ford Motor Company or some other large group had come under default, but the charter has to be applied in this case," he's suggesting. The council, O'Reilly Corporation Council Deb Walling, and Fakhouri discuss an escrow account that had been set up so the city would hold on to the property and not enter any other agreements with other parties. The account, as it was structured, called for, this is interesting, isn't it? All these ins and outs. $1,000 a month to be put into escrow. If Fakhouri had purchased the lot, that $1,000 a month, which had grown to about $30,000, according to O'Reilly, would be taken off the purchase price. If the sale did not materialize, the city would keep that $30,000. I'm not sure what the purchase price is, but he's buying a whole parking lot from the city. Well, there goes parking. Free parking, maybe, too. Well, anyway, it's just a lot of money, and things aren't going well, and things are bad all over, so why should I even bring this up? Okay. 8 minutes to go. Today I have bad news for those who are listening live to the show on Friday, December the 19th. Highway 61 will not be on the air this afternoon because of the bad, very, very bad weather. I was going to be Joanne Korchinska's ride, and I decided that because the college parking lots and sidewalks, when I came in at that point, had not been shoveled when I had to make this decision an hour ago before the show, that I could not safely transport Joanne from West Dearborn, her home, to here. So, Joanne, if you're listening, I apologize to you and to all of the Highway 61 listeners. They will get treated to classical music this afternoon for 4 hours from Classical 24 from Public Radio International if our satellite dish is not filled up with snow at that point. But my concern was the safety, and I'm sure all of our concerns, the safety of our staff, our volunteers here, and Joanne. Yeah, since it was going to be my responsibility to get her here with my four-wheel drive car, I had some trouble getting here myself. I felt the roads at that point in time when I had to decide were not good enough that I could feel comfortable taking her life into my hands. And so that will not happen today. So we'll be going to classical music starting at 2 o'clock. I am told that I've just had a call from program directors during our non-commercial break at the midpoint of this hour, Marie, that she's in charge of programming here, our appointed program director officer, is that the 6 o'clock DJ, Tom, is going to be coming in, and her hubby, Mike, is intending to come in, and so we probably will have those other shows, but those people are driving themselves in, and they are. That was not recommended by me, the station advisor. I'm only the advisor, right? If they want to do the shows, I'm sure they'll do great shows for you, but in this case, I didn't choose, considering on the road situation and the campus situation here at Henry Ford Community College, to risk a life of Joanne Kay, our host for Highway 61. And so my apologies to her. I think I made the best decision. I have to get your blues news some other way. One blues announcement I can make in lieu of 4 hours of Joanne and the Best in Blues in Detroit, I think, is that there will be tomorrow, Saturday the 20th, Michigan Artist Christmas Fundraiser at the Token Lounge, Joy Road in Westland. $10 donation is 21 or over. It features the Harmonica Shaw Band, Austin Scott, Mike Smith, and a band we know and love and has been featured here a couple of times on the Motor Show, The Mugs. That's tomorrow night, Saturday night, the 20th, at the Token Lounge, Joy Road, Michigan Artist Christmas Fundraiser. So I don't know if that's profit or nonprofit. It is a fundraiser. They're asking for a $10 donation to help support Michigan artists. Okay. That can't be all bad. And some great, great blues people here. I'm not personally familiar with Austin Scott or Mike Smith, but I know of Harmonica Shaw Band and know the Mugs, and I know you'll have a great time if you decide to do that. That was just an announcement that I just got this morning at 10 o'clock. Joanne hasn't seen that yet either. Even if she was here, she wouldn't have gotten it herself. Let's see what else is going on in the last couple minutes of the show. Looking at the Dearborn Times Herald. As we said at the start of the hour, for those that tuned in late, President Bush has stated he wants to use TARP money, part of the $700 billion approved for the banking bailout, for $13 measly billion dollars of loans with heavy-duty stipulations on them to save GM and Chrysler. And there still may be a reason why they can't get the check tomorrow, because Congress, we believe, has to allow the money to be opened up for that purpose. And they weren't in agreement with doing it last week, so why would they change and be in agreement with tomorrow? It's the holidays. Maybe the Santa Claus spirit is hitting them. Who knows? Tim Skupik gets a great a chance to talk about efficiency in Lansing. We don't have time enough to cover that. That's in the Dearborn Press and Guide. I also believe I want to give credit to the Press and Guide. They took my suggestion. My suggestion? Yes, it was my suggestion. Last Sunday, I was surprised, but in Sunday, December 14th, they have started, although there's not a picture or a big heading. But if you look on page 6A, it's time to help ourselves rebuild. Jim Hightower. So congratulations. I suggested that his print opinions be picked up by one local paper or the other. And look at that. Just 2 days after I made my comment, there it is. Of course, we've been featuring, not today, but we've been featuring Jim Hightower's audio commentaries for the last year or more here, not every week, but almost every other week on the new WHFR Journal, since we get them for free. And I'm glad to see it's there. And look for that if you do subscribe to the Press and Guide. The Sunday edition, at least last Sunday, had Jim Hightower in there. I hope they give him a picture and a nice little box, just like they do for Tom Watkins and they do for Tim Skupik, because he's equally important and his opinions are very well expressed and very easy to understand, very clear. And so I hope that you will take note of that. Tom Watkins says he's mad at hell, mad as hell, which is a phrase from the movie Network, okay, about working situations and job loss. Well, aren't we all, Tom? That's sort of a useless comment. Thanks for telling us your feelings, though. Let's see what else is going on I want to feature. Well, that's it. That's all the time we do have for today, December the 19th, 2008, snow day. Probably still shouldn't park your cars on the street in Dearborn. It's probably still a snow emergency. I'd like to see them come shovel one more time, actually, for the good of the weekend. But we don't know about that. Watch your driving if you have to go out. Be careful. I expect to be back next Friday on the 26th, Boxing Day. We'll talk about boxing and what it means in Canada and England, and any other news that might happen to pop up. That's also the day, the 20, 6 technically, that we're going to begin our Best of 2008 musical shows. Alternative music that you can't hear anywhere else. It was the Best of 2008 on our station in all the different formats. Tune in starting next Friday to find out. Thanks for listening. Jay Kornick saying be careful out there. This is WHFR Dearborn. Let's keep stirring things up.
Completely different one, John Rutter explains. And John Rutter is best known as a writer of Christmas carols. And his 24 carols have gone around the world and helped him make some friends along the way. These carols, he says, are my calling cards. He's also arranged more than 100 carols, and we're going to hear a few of those with the Cambridge Singers and John Rutter just ahead. And here's something to help you slow down during the busy hustle-bustle time of year. It's Schubert's Ave Maria.